Welcome to the Event Tech Podcast, where we explore the ever-evolving world of event technology every week. Now, let's talk tech.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Event Tech Podcast. That man over across from me virtually from around the other side of the country is Brant Kruger from IDCOM. Oh, the shallow Brant Kruger from IDCOM, I should say.
Oh, you almost missed the adjective. Yeah, that guy over there is the quizzical Will Curran of Bizabo and Ooh. Click.
Ooh, quizzical. Quizzical, clicky. Quizzical. I think you could like get tripped up on those words. Quizzically, clicky, Will.
Bizabo, quizzical, clickly, there's a lot going on there, pal.
There definitely is. Well, not getting tripped up on our words today.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, obviously we always like to start the show having a little fun, but we did want to talk about kind of a serious topic today. You know, recently as we're recording this, and it was all over the event world news, that a Chicago area CEO died after falling onto a stage at a packed, you know, company event in India. So a very tragic situation that happened. And I'm sure there was going to be lots of investigations into, you know, how it happened and why it happened. But just a tragic, tragic death of someone live in front of an audience, which is just about the worst possible thing you can think of that could happen at an event. And so we thought we'd try and spend just a little time talking about production safety and some of the things that are obvious and maybe some of the things that are not quite so obvious that we can do to try and reduce the risk of that absolute worst case scenario that can come from an event.
And, you know, I think I'm a little bit removed from the production world, so I didn't quite hear about this story. I'm also, I think, sometimes have my head stuck in the sand. But, you know, I think, you know, there's all these events, I think, that have happened over the years. When we think of event safety, I think we can probably name on our, you know, count them on two hands, the amount of serious things that have happened in my career, at least. But, you know, the fact that this happened, you know, almost in like a public display manner just feels like absolutely horrible for it to happen. And, you know, I think obviously no one wants any of these sort of situations to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's gaming to be unsafe. But I think there's a lot of ways that are worth having conversations about little small things we can do to help increase the amount of safety at our events.
Anytime there's rigging involved where something is hanging from the ceiling or something like that, there's a mm-hmm. danger involved. And it's why, you know, I know sometimes people get upset with, you know, staffing regulations or having to use a required vendor or, you know, why do we have to pay this person, you know, 5 hours when they're just going up and they're going to work in the rafters for, you know, 20 minutes. And then come back down. And a lot of it has to do with exactly what we're talking about here, just making sure that you're using a professional company that's licensed, insured, and that the people that are doing it are experienced in that department. You know, I think back through my career, and I'm very fortunate that, you know, there's been some close calls, right, where something has gone wrong, even, you know, especially if I go back into my theater days, and been very fortunate, at least as far as the production side goes, that there haven't been any major issues. But, you know, some of the things that I've seen, you know, again, going back into my theatrical career way back in the day, you know, where you're dealing with battens, you know, the actual, like, think old school theatrical bars of lights and things that go up and down in a theater. Those are all weighted and have to be weighted perfectly in order to function properly by being able to, you know, pull the rope and, you know, raise and lower things. So as you add lights and things like that to a batten, you then have to add weight to the other side so that,
like,
it stays in balance. Yeah, counterweight to the other side. And so, you know, in college once, we were loading two battens that were connected to each other and the weight, you know, went out of balance and they flipped and dropped a several hundred pound metal cage around the lighting designer that was standing on stage. Like, she just somehow missed getting hit by this thing. It was really, really crazy. Everything came to a stop, but it absolutely would have killed her had it landed on her as opposed to around her. It's kind of hard to describe. But so anytime you're dealing with any kind of rigging, it really is incredibly important that you, you know, slow down. You know, we're not going to use Joe Blow's discount rigging services. You know, you know, most of the time they have trusted vendors. I know, you know, you've probably heard me, you know, bemoaning having to use in-house services for various things. This is one where I totally understand, right? There's so much liability. There's so much riding on, you know, the rigging being done safely. It really is to the venue's benefit to require you to use their, you know, their in-house vendor for that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's always so interesting because, like, you know, as somebody who started a company and you start on like the lower end of budgets, a lot of times, you know, you're trying to figure out how to do cool, unique things for as cheap as possible as a production company. And I remember, like, in the beginning of my career, like, I was lucky that I you know, worked with a ton of production companies that were extremely focused on safety. So I learned from a lot of really great people and people who were very critical of other companies who didn't do things safely. So it made me very, very understanding of the safety aspect of things. But, you know, as you start to kind of work with customers and things like that, you start to think like, oh, is there a creative way that I can do this XYZ rigging? But eventually you start to realize, like, look, it's just easier to work, you know, for example, with the in-house on the rigging portion of things. And, you know, these guys do really know what they're doing. And I think that, you know, while it's painful to think, man, this person's basically making $100 an hour or whatever it may be to just come in here and hang lights off of rafters, it, you know, I think anybody in a safety situation, if there was something were to go wrong and it were because of budget cuts, I don't think anyone would have said, oh yeah, I wish we didn't spend more money on the right rigging on there. And I think that's where that hindsight methodology comes in. But, you know, I think when it comes to the rigging portion of things, I think that, you know, for everybody who's listening to our audience who maybe isn't in the production world, is maybe more of a planner role, you know, it's very, very easy for things to go wrong. So if you spend the time to do it the right way, you think it through 100%, and you have qualified people do it, it can prevent tragedy from happening.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, we're really, I would imagine everyone involved is sincerely hoping that this incident in India is definitely not a case of, and we're all hoping it's just some kind of freak accident and not some kind of somebody cut corners or, you know, did it on a budget or anything like that. So I think we're all really hoping that's the case. Anytime you're hanging something over your attendees, you want that to be secure. You know, you want to make sure that it's going to be safe and done well. You want to make sure that the riggers themselves are behaving in a safe manner, that they've got the right, you know, cabling on themselves. I'm blanking on the word. The rigging harness that you wear to make sure that, you know, if they can't fall down as they're up in the steel. And then to your point, Will, you know, and we've said this in our AV Smackdowns in the past, that, you know, one of the real benefits of the in-house folks is that they know the venue. And so they're going to know where it's safe up in the ceiling to hang things from and where it's not. And it's, as you know, bringing in an external vendor is not the time to kind of guess, can I hang from this point or that kind of thing. So it's another instance where it really does make sense. So yeah, we're obviously very much hoping that there weren't any corners cut or anything like that on that production. It's definitely not the place to skimp is when it comes to safety of your event.
Sure. One thing I wanted to add to it too is that, you know, a lot of times I think why this is so important too is that, like, as event professionals in general, we're really good about doing stuff on, like, the seat of our bootstraps, whatever the saying is. We like doing things on the fly, and we sometimes make decisions on changing stage layouts, designs, and things like that. But, you know, anytime I've seen something, you know, be a close call, I definitely, I'm lucky that oh man, that must have been terrifying seeing the cage drop down onto your lighting designer. But like, I haven't had a situation that necessarily happen like that, but I've seen a lot of times where like rigs will get out of balance. A lot of times it's out of balance and it just all of a sudden something shoots up, something drops, you know, a scenic piece falls or something like that. And it can create a real scare. But a lot of times that ends up happening is because of the chance that something's changing on site and it's changing beyond the plan of what was originally designed on here. And sometimes too, it's also just really bad luck that happens because we're in a rush or, you know, everyone's trying to just get done in time so they can make the lunch break. But we have to remember that, like, you know, safety is about planning ahead, being prepared and thinking through everything that could happen on there too.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go next, is that a lot of times when I've seen mistakes happen is because of people rushing. You know, they're trying to get something done too fast. It's another reason why frequently when you are dealing with the rigging, whether it's the in-house AV or a rigging company, they'll want that plot weeks in advance so they can make sure that all the weights are properly distributed, that you're connecting to the right points, that things are in the right place. Frequently, you're asked to submit those rigging plots up to 4 weeks in advance of your event. But then also, yeah, being part of safety is making sure that you're not forcing people to rush. And so, you know, on the production side, we usually prefer to have a full setup day before we enter into rehearsals and things like that. But frequently, especially in today's market, we're running into where either the planners don't think to or are unaware or are unable to, either don't think to or unable to book the general session room the day before they're, you know, supposed to start doing rehearsals and things. And sometimes day before their event, that hotels and venues are booking things so tight that it used to be like, oh, do you mind if we came in on Tuesday instead of Monday, or, you know, Monday instead of Tuesday, no problem. But now that the bookings are so tight and booking way into 2025, we're having to work a lot faster, I feel like, than we used to. As far as we're seeing a lot more setups that are get there at 6 a.m., bust hump so that you can start being ready to start rehearsing by 4 p.m., and then, you know, because the executives have a party they need to get to that night, you know, something along those lines, you know, so it's, or put simply, like, on a recent event, where we were traveling to, so we've got, you know, trucks that need to be on dock. We've got people flying in. They were like, well, we think you can get in the day before. This is the venue, not the client. I mean, and the clients fully like, in the know. We think you can get in the night before, but if it rains, that's our rain, you know, option for the other group that's already there.
Oh.
So we would be able to tell you on Saturday whether or not you could load in Saturday night. And we're just like, we're not even going to play that game. We're, you know, we're not going to fly people in a day early, you know, on the off chance that we might be able to get into the ballroom. And guess what? We got there. And it was terrible weather and they had to use the ballroom. So it would have been completely wasted day. It would have been a wasted day of staffing for the client, right? They would have had to have paid for an extra day of labor.
Here's your rain option. Build a tent. Like, don't make make the other customer look. If you decide you're going to do it outdoors, the backup option is have a tent over it, or, you know, or just do it in a tent period or so, or move it to an off location. But like, don't force another customer to like move things around. But I get it. It's like the maximization of profits and trying to save that money. And what's funny is it used to be just like, oh, we just, you know, we're trying to save money. But what's funny is that here's the second part of that your piece that you bring up, and I apologize, I totally interrupted you, Brant, but the fact that you are now rushing and having to get there earlier, starting at 6 a.m. to do rehearsals at 4 p.m., now it means that people are more tired, which then leads to sleepy mistakes, not paying attention, exhaustion, you know, all these things like that. And now it's like the compound of the safety effect is happening.
Yep. And it's, you know, the same thing on the out too, right? So a lot of times, and you've been there a million times, Will, in your past production life, where, you know, you finish the event at 6, 7 o'clock, and then you strike it that night. so that everybody can leave the next day. And so as, if there's an awards program or something like that, you could be going till 3 o'clock in the morning after having started at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And so you're pushing, you know, a 20 hour day at that point. On one of our recent events, we actually were, you know, we talked with the client about it. We're like, hey, we know normally we do this where we tear down that night. Would you be open to us, you know, coming back the next morning? So we, you know, we'll strike up until about midnight, you know, that way we're not, and then we come in fresh at 8 o'clock. So there's no turnaround time, which you can go back and listen to some of our other episodes to talk about things like turnaround time. But basically, you know, you can't come back too quickly the next morning. So we came back comfortably and most people agreed it was one of the most well-organized strikes we'd ever done because we really talked it through, like, okay, what do we need to get done that night versus what can we come back and do first thing in the morning? And so it, and everybody was just fresh, you know, getting a few hours of sleep. You know, we were just more mentally aware. And so I think there's an aspect of that too, just making sure that when you're working those incredibly long days, it might be counterproductive and you might actually be heading towards an accident or an injury that could have been avoided with even just a few hours of sleep before the next day.
I have a total like side story that it completely goes off topic for a second, but you know, I don't think at any other episode I'll ever be able to talk about this, but I love getting to take a, like I've done so many of those like, hey, things run late and then come back and break down the next morning. You know, it's always the worst part though, is that like, if you're one of the few people that shows up, if it's people show up late, just like how much like the first few people that get there, get things done. And then you're like the person who shows up a little late or, you know, or is on time. And it's just, you happen to get there early because you just were an early riser that morning. You're like, man, I pretty much tore almost all this down myself. Like you're going to get to load the truck, not me.
It's funny that you said that because that's exactly what happened is that we did a hard cut at midnight. And so a bunch of us that were like full-time employees or, you know, we're just going to be on a 10-hour minimum anyway, like got up early and came in anyway. So we came in, you know, a couple of the guys came in actually at like 7, you know, for an 8 o'clock call and just busted hump so that we could get out of there faster. So that's, it's funny that you say that because that's exactly what happened.
I was just like, oh, I want to share this because this is definitely like like something that never will get brought up ever again on the podcast.
And we were flying out that afternoon too, so people were like a little nervous about how tight it was going to be to get to the airport and things like that. So like they're like, I'm not taking a chance. You know, there was some weather rolling in. You know, we're not going to take a chance that we get stuck here. I want to move on to another aspect that, again, I think might not be so obvious, and it's something we've been intentionally working on at IDCOM, and that is kind of being responsible a little bit for the safety of the room. And what I mean by that is we've been very intentionally adding to our work boxes fully stocked first aid kits, an AED, you know, the defibrillator, the little small, you know, portable ones. They're really small now, so they take up no space. So between the first aid kit and the defibrillator, and then we also then marked, and a fire extinguisher as well. Small fire extinguisher, first aid kit, defibrillator, and then we marked the case that has those in with a giant first aid kit inside and fire extinguisher inside label, so that we're just kind of taking on some of that responsibility because you don't have time always to get a hold of hotel security or something like that if there's a problem. And I can give a couple real world examples. And the first one, unfortunately, was that I was working at a venue, and this was many, many years ago, but a person had a shellfish allergy, and the catering people had used shellfish as a filling and hadn't labeled it. And unfortunately, it was unlabeled as having shellfish in it, and the person had some, and they died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital because of a mislabeled food in a buffet line. That was obviously a tragedy, and it was an eye-opener for me personally and for the company I was working for at the time, of how quickly a food allergy can happen and how dangerous it is. And so one of the shop guys actually had access to prescription for EpiPens before they were, you know, $1,000 a pen there for a while. And so we actually then started stocking an EpiPen in one of the work boxes. And so while that was a tragedy, on another event at one of these giant convention hotels, to illustrate my point about not being able to get a hold of security and stuff, same kind of thing where somebody just accidentally they weren't paying attention. It was not the fault of the venue, to be clear, and accidentally had an allergic reaction to something. That tech like ran backstage, grabbed the EpiPen, ran back out and administered the EpiPen before we even saw security or anybody from the venue, and saved that person's life. Like the ambulance, wow, you know, showed up and they got in there and they said, thank goodness you had that, because this person would have died. So that's another thing that we're working on trying to get in our work boxes as well, and something to consider out there as planners. We've got our little, you know, our little kits and our Pelicans and things like that. That's another thing to consider if you have access to an EpiPen to keep in that, in a location that's handy for your event.
I love it. That's so, like, it's so smart. I mean, it's something for us to realize is that, like, the safety of everyone is everyone's job, right?
Right.
It's not just a responsibility of security. It's not just a responsibility of the planners. It's all of our responsibilities. It's why, you know, when we talk, like, I think we've talked about on Event Icons before, I don't know if we've talked about much on this exact podcast, but like about like active shooter situations. It's like, there's a reason why it puts everybody through those trainings, is because it's not just one person's job to do this. And, you know, I'm not talking about like, this is one of those like, oh, data is one of the biggest trends for 2024. So you as a planner need to know how to compute data, and this is what part of your job now. No, this is like really legitimate. This is everyone's job. So I think that's one of the most amazing points to make, Brandt, is like, look, like just the small things for us to be able to do can help out a ton. One thing I wanted to point out is probably for maybe our European listeners is they're thinking to themselves like, man, these Americans, they just like get away with not having to do like anything. And I think most people, I think if you're an American listener right now or a Canadian listener on here and you're wondering what the hell do I mean by this, is that like in Europe, there's like very, very strict laws about these sort of things. And I always love it whenever I go over, whenever we're doing shows in like, and for like, we're talking about Event Tech Live Vegas versus Event Tech Live London, but Adam and the team will totally make fun of the fact that like in America, you like, you know, you got like forklifts flying around and no, you know, no one's wearing hard hats. And he's like, it's crazy. Like, and you go to London, every vendor has to be wearing like a safety vest,
orange vest, safety vest, head, exactly.
Yeah. It's insane. And I remember one of the things, and someone, I'm just going to share this really cool idea, 'cause we never ended up doing anything with it, but if anyone from the production world or any vendor is listening to this, I'm about to give you marketing gold. But we were doing a lot of events over in Europe, and we did this. I got this idea when we were doing an event in Germany. And in Germany, they actually, all the production companies have to put up safety signs saying things like, this is a hard hat zone, here's all the warnings. And they do it by putting a pop-up sign right by the door. And it's brilliant because, in addition to it being the safety sign of like, hey, here's all the things that could potentially kill you right here, but it was also perfect marketing because then every single person walked in, saw what production company was doing the production at that time. So please, someone take that marketing idea, because I don't want that to go to waste. But the point of that of it is that, you know, if you ever really want to see how this should be done right, man, just go work a couple events in Europe, and you'll see like on the American side of things how far behind we are on these things. But granted, just because you're required to in Europe and you're not in the US doesn't mean that it's an excuse for you guys to do amazing things like have a freaking first aid kit that costs what, like $50, an EpiPen. Right, that's exactly. like $50 now, and it is pretty easy to administer. Like, just do these things and you could potentially save someone's life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you something that I probably shouldn't, but you know, it's just us. It's just us. Nobody else is listening.
No one else listens to this.
But the EpiPen prescriptions, they expire. They're still good for about a year after they've expired. And so a lot of folks who have a regular prescription, that is a good source of an emergency EpiPen, right? As a less than 1 year expired EpiPen is better than no EpiPen. So that's if that's a way of getting a hold of one and putting it in a work box, that is one way to do it. I am not a medical doctor and I do not play one on TV. So just bear that in mind. But that is my understanding, that they're good for about a year even after they're expired, and possibly even longer than that. So if you have someone who has a hookup through the VA or something like that, where they're getting them regularly, but not necessarily using them, that could be a source as well. Well, there was one more thing that you brought up that I'd love to hit kind of before we wrap things up. You brought up the idea of the active shooter situation. And beyond that, it's another good idea, and it's something that I've been trying to implement on my shows as well, that just having that safety conversation of what happens if something happens. And it doesn't have to be active shooter. We had a situation on one of my recent shows where there was a tornado warning. And so the venue came in and said, we need you all to evacuate. We hadn't opened the doors yet. We were still kind of clicking through things in the morning. So it was just us in the ballroom. Venue came up and said, we need you all to go to the lower level. There's a tornado warning. There was a tornado within 10 miles of the venue where we were at. And so it was a real threat. And so it's, you know, just calmly got on the headset, explained, hey, everybody, I need you to put down your headsets. Don't grab anything, you know, or you know, because we got to leave, you know. And so having that conversation that in the event of emergency, I know some production teams have a code word in case of an emergency situation, that if somebody says this code word, that means put down your headset and leave. Like, we don't have to discuss it. We don't have to talk about it. You don't have to know what it is. Just put down your headset and leave. Those are more kind of high-end shows where there's a more of a possibility of an active shooter situation or something like that.
The customer says they're not going to pay the overtime. Bananas.
Right.
Put down your headset and leave.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So have those conversations with your crew about, you know, hey, if there's an emergency, don't go grabbing your laptop and your things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to leave it and we need to leave now. Kind of situation. If it's other than that, I'll tell you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So if it's okay to, you know, linger, yeah, we got 10 minutes, whatever, the tornado's 50 miles away, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that's another situation. So have those conversations with your staff, have those conversations with your crew about, yeah, what constitutes a safety event and what to do in case of an emergency. More and more, I'm hearing announcements during the opening housekeeping that say, you know, basically like an airline, you know, flight attendant, you know, take a look around. Where are the exits? You know, in the event of emergency, here's what's going to happen, those kinds of things. So those are great conversations to have as well.
And just to bring it full circle, I think, to the larger conversation of, you know, a lot of times just asking the question, what would happen if, would save so many chances of disastrous things happening. And, you know, again, there's a lot of stuff still coming out about the tragic story that we opened up with. But I bet you if the conversation was what would happen if this happened, probably could have prevented a disaster from ever happening in the first place.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I say, I'm just hoping that it would truly was just a freak accident somehow that could not have been prevented. Because if it could have been, ugh, that just breaks your heart.
Indeed.
And on that unfortunate, sad note, we probably need to wrap things up. We would love to hear your safety tips. Please reach out to us. The best way to do that these days is probably through LinkedIn. Just to connect with either Will or I and let us know what kind of safety tips you have, what kind of experiences you've had, and if there's experiences that end happily, we would love to hear them. You know what I mean? Because sometimes those are like, phew, and they make for good stories in the end. And so, yeah, we would absolutely love to hear those. So that's let us know your close calls, maybe what you learned from them, and what other important safety tips you've got for your events.
Absolutely. And we hope you come back and join us on future Event Tech Podcasts. We promise this is your first ever episode that we aren't usually this somber and saddening. But, you know, Brent and I have been doing this for a while, so we figured we'd talk about how it really is. And, you know, we hope you all really appreciate the real talk as well. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next time on the Event Tech Podcast.
Event Tech out.
Thanks again for listening to the Event Tech Podcast. Be sure to rate and review us on your favorite podcasting app. Also, be sure to head to eventtechpodcast.com and leave us a comment about this week's episode, ask a follow-up question, or let us know about some event tech we need to talk about. We'll see you next week on the Event Tech Podcast.
And that guy over there is the quizzical Will Curran of
Click. And did Brant freeze, or did my internet crash? We'll find out on the Event Tech Podcast. Oh, man, he's
back. Your video froze.
Oh, my video froze
there for a bit.
Oh, you know, and it was funny.
Yeah, why don't you kill your video and then we'll take it again.
We'll try it again. Let me see if I can do it. Well, I'm going to try to do it with the video again.
You're pretty chunky.
Oh, I'm chunky.
Okay.